Your Steve Jones Show podcast will start shortly. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Brewers Outlet, your beverage supermarket on Reagan Street in Sunbury.
You saw him last night in studio during the NIT, and he's with us again. It's John Crispin. John, great to have you back.
Hey, man. I appreciate you having me. My relevance is fleeting, so I'm happy to still be talking hoops, brother.
Here's a guy who was a part of the 2000 Penn State NIT team that went to the Final Four and then the next year went to the NCAA. So he has a great perspective on it. John, I want to start with the state of the game, if you don't mind. We have had we had the lowest scoring NCAA tournament since 2015. They had loosened the rules up in 15 for more freedom of movement, and it seemed to be paying off. So you and I sit down, rack up some video here. You know, what are a couple of changes that the game needs to think about to make this a more entertaining game than it is now?
Well, first, if you're going to do something like freedom of movement, the idea is to create balance on the floor. You also have to define what freedom is. It's a contact sport. And there are times where blowing the whistle to basically reinforce or enforce freedom of movement is great in theory. But blowing the whistle a lot gets in the way of the flow of the game. It gets in the way of the rhythm of the game. And I think that's something that we saw with that freedom of movement. We celebrated it because scoring was up, but so is free throw shooting. And free throw shooting isn't good for the game. Obviously, a foul's a foul. But when you're shooting a lot of one-on-ones early in the half, and you're shooting fouls with 8 minutes left to go in the half,
right,
I'm not sure that's really good for basketball either.
Right.
So I think you have to define what acceptable contact is along with that freedom of movement. First and foremost, just get the two hands off of the ball handling. It's an advantage gained by the defense. You have to call it early. Now, I think the other key to that is give these guys six fouls. You know, what happens in our game is you don't want to call that foul because the old coaches are saying you're taking my best player off the floor, or you're, let's just say what it is, you're neutering my best player early in the game, so my best player can't be aggressive. I think if you go six fouls, you can establish how you're going to call that game early without taking the best players on the floor. I think that's a good first step. Now, I have a ton of other rule changes, but I don't know how long your show is, man.
Well, I'll tell you, let's do a couple simplistic things. Tug of the shirt to me is a foul. Okay, so that's one.
Why are we taking time to tuck the shirt in?
Right.
Tuck it in.
I was talking about the tug of the shirt, right?
Tug of the shirt.
Right. In other words, they grab the shirt as they're going around screen. It happens all the time. That's a foul. You got to stop that.
I got him.
Right? And, yep. then the other one I can't stand, them calling a foul on the dribble handoff. Like, stop. Just let them play, okay? Oh, it's a moving screen. Oh, knock it off. It's a dribble handoff.
Hey, Steve, think about this. It's a moving screen, yet the defense is switching.
Yes.
How does that make sense?
Right.
It's just team defense. The guy jumps in front of the guy who's basically just free roll to the basket. You jump in front of him and make contact with a screener or the guy handing the ball off, and it's a foul. It's nonsensical, man. I don't get it.
Should the lane be wider?
Yes. I've been saying it for 3 years. I said, if you're going to go to an extended three-point line, the only reason why you don't widen the lane is that so the old purists can say, well, we're not the NBA. Yeah, you're not the NBA, obviously. Your score is 65-60. But you extended the three-point line to create better spacing on the floor. Everybody can shoot it. Yet you didn't widen the lane. Why don't you widen the lane, extend that restricted arc out further, and all of a sudden now we're talking about a little bit more free-flowing game, less of those bad block charges, and adapt the gather rule. For those block charges that they seemingly cannot get right that determine the outcome of a game, and we're working on the right to verticality, and I say working on it because clearly not getting it, i.e. Chet Holmgren against Arkansas.
Right.
We're not getting that right. Figure the gather rule out. So we get rid of some of those bad block charges that are plays at the rim. They should be plays at the rim, not plays on the floor. It's not a basketball play sliding in while someone's trying to score. You know, legal guarding position is a lot different than that block charge rule. So I think that's key. We've got to get that figured out. And I'll tell you the other one, give me a fourth official. There's enough money. give me a fourth official. He's your review official. He's standing there in front of the DBS sports equipment, and there are no timely delays that impact the game. And those impacts on the game often come late, and they eliminate coaching from end-of-game situations, where coaches seemingly have 10 fouls or 10 timeouts at the end of a game because of all those reviews. It's,
right.
It's absurd.
By widening the lane, by the way, that also means the restrictive arc would be expanded. And that to me is a big part of it, because 90% of block charges, you and I know, are blocks.
Yes. Yes. And they're not basketball plays.
No. They're not basketball
they're
plays.
Let me front of this guy and hold my particulars and say that I'm playing defense. The reality is you were late. And I'm getting tired of rewarding it. We talk about trying to get flopping out of the game. The most flopping occurs on those block charges, and the reason why these kids do it is because they get rewarded for it.
Flop should be a technical foul, automatic.
100%, Class B technical.
Yeah, I mean, it should, automatic. It should, I mean, a flop should be a technical foul right away. I just want to get more scoring back into the game. Even if it's like another 3-4 points a game, where at least you feel, in other words, stop grabbing shirts on screens, okay? Stop penalizing dribble handoffs. The officials penalize it. Well, it's a point of emphasis. Point of emphasis? Come on. Cut me a break.
Well,
stop
remember,
penalizing offense.
Well, remember this. Point of emphasis means imbalance.
Yes.
If something's going to be a point of emphasis, there needs to be a counter to that point of emphasis where you establish what a legal screen or a legal handoff is. Also, you have to empower these officials to read the game.
Yeah.
If they're doing this against Villanova and you're saying, hey, they're switching 1 through 5, I can't call that dribble handoff where the guy makes contact with the other defender who is now occupying that man. I can't call that as a foul. So you do have to trust the instincts of officials, which is certainly not the case because Big Brother is looming, man. They're watching.
Yeah. I mean, all the time. I love the idea of a fourth official. I also think that the Major League Baseball is doing this, and I've advocated this for a long time. This is a very small thing, but to me, little things, you do enough little things, they equal big things. Okay, the lead ref needs to be mic'd to tell the crowd in the arena what the ruling is. All right?
I agree.
You cannot make the home experience better than the arena experience.
Yes. Because they come to us and they tell us what's going on, and we then relay that message to the fans, who then understand, oh, okay, this is what happened and why. I like how the NBA does it.
Yes.
With the video feed, too. I think that's good. But I think that camera should be on the fourth official.
I agree. I agree.
The fourth official could be the engaging part of the game for the fan base. The fourth official could be the one that actually does announce what the call was.
Yes.
So I just think there's, but Steve, the biggest issue to me, we haven't really adapted to the game, and this is typical of the NCAA, right? One of my core values is to adapt without changing who you are.
Right.
Right? It's natural that the world progresses. Things evolve. People's ideals evolve. And the idea is you have to adapt, but you can't do it by changing who you are.
Right.
And the NCAA, gosh almighty, that I don't think they want to do either. They don't want to adapt, yet they keep changing who they are.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They say, a name, image, and likeness is now okay. Well, you're not adapting to the game. You're just putting Band-Aids on issues.
Wow.
And I think adapting to the game is recognizing the strengths of the kids today.
Yeah.
And that's not name, image, and likeness. That's not branding. That's skill set. And the skill set is an NBA-level skill set. Everybody's learning how to handle the basketball. So you have 5 men who are passers and dribblers. How are we honoring that skill set? We're not.
Right.
And I think that's what frustrates me the most, is we haven't adapted rules to support what the game is today.
Well, the NCAA doesn't lead, okay? That's my biggest problem with the NCAA, whether it's name, image, and likeness or whatever. Name, image, and likeness, they won't do anything because they're afraid of lawsuits. Just lead.
Okay?
You can't have your legal counsel be the leader in the room. You just look at them and go, like, you know what? We're going to do this, and we'll, right? Because we think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah. Whatever happened to education? How quickly did they bail on education as a value to college student athletes?
Oh.
Bail. Somebody bailed on it.
Yeah.
And it just shows a cowardice, to be honest, But Steve, I got to tell you, it looks political to me. And it looks political in the form of, let's just maintain our power. Let's maintain what we make money on to the best of our ability, when the reality is you were doomed the second you gave up control.
Yeah.
Like, you were doomed the second you catered to the angry mob that is Twitter, which makes up 30% of our population. And of that 30%, 10% actually engages.
Right.
So who are you answering to?
Exactly.
You know, just sorry to say, but just because Jay Billis can rally a crowd through Twitter doesn't mean we should cater to them. Stand on your two feet and say, this is what we are all about. This is what we represent. This is what we stand for. If you don't like it, go ahead and go to the NBA.
Right.
Go ahead. That's... Go to the G League. If you don't like what we have to offer, go. And the fact that they allow names like this with no control whatsoever, we now have collectives which are nothing but recruiting enticements. And if you don't have it, I know Penn State has success with honor now.
Yeah.
If you don't have that, you're not getting kids, which tells me the NCAA failed miserably in this regard. Right.
Because what they did was, I mean we're going to go to Congress. No, do it yourself. Okay, I realize every state has their own law. That's why Quinn Ewers ended up going to Ohio State for 1 year and then transferred finally to Texas, because the Texas law on someone his age is different than the Ohio law. I got it.
Yep.
But that's because the NCAA wouldn't lead on it. They had something. It looked like they were close. And they were like, well, and the lawyers, like, stop it. Lead.
Yep.
It's okay.
Yep.
Oh, and by the way, is it okay to have a scholarship? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's like they forgot that value, that like having a scholarship's really, really good. It's really good.
Well, we have bailed on education. We've bailed on the value of a scholarship, and that to me is deplorable. That's weak. And you know, we talk about, you hear Billis talk about a lot, where, you know, what's missing in the NCAA, and it's basically an authority. And ultimately, that's what leadership should be. It should be an authority over the game. The reality is we seem to be pursuing anarchy more than authority. Mm-hmm. And that concerns me. You know, you watch a lot of basketball anarchy, and that means basketball without boundaries, where guys just roll the balls out and they play. It's like, in the end, that doesn't work. In the end, that gets beat. The idea is to have boundaries. And within those boundaries, there's a lot of freedom. But you need to be clear and concise as to what those boundaries are. And that, to me, is what's missing in our world. It's not the NCAA. It's our world.
Yeah.
It's cowards catering to the angry mob on social media, when in reality, you should be leadership that establishes the true narrative, what you really are. Now, the problem is you got to be consistent. And consistency is ultimately what's missing in leadership.
And what's difficult in games is – when you have to play from behind all day.
Yeah.
Okay. What you're talking about in real life is you're always reacting to something because you're playing from behind. You're not playing from in front.
Yep. And we talk about wanting to be progressive in so many ways. It's impossible to be progressive and reactionary.
Yep.
It's only possible to be progressive and honestly having a vision that you can chase that is consistent with what you stand for. I mean, look, if you want to get this right, NCAA, you really need to establish some new bylaws. Mm-hmm. And you need to say, this is how we're going to hold people accountable, of which we will be held accountable for standing by what we are. Now, part of that is, you know, you're going to have to open up. There's going to be require some transparency in that regard. And quite frankly, I think the world with social media, with the internet, the age of information, the age of information requires transparency, and I think that's a big issue for the NCAA. I think that's something they're concerned with.
All right, so now the games themselves, just for a change of pace, if you don't mind. Villanova plays at a pace that is, it's deliberate. And I think, and they're about 21 seconds of possession, right around there. They're in the bottom, you know, 5% of pace. Kansas wants to ratchet it up and down the floor. How important is it going to be, A, for Villanova to establish that pace, but then play with the lead with that pace?
Well, I think that's key, given the fact that you don't have Justin Moore. Now, their pace is funny. Like, when they have 7 or 8, where you can trust having 8 legitimate players to work in your rotation, they will pick up the pace a little bit more, but you're not going to see them push. They honestly look like a more skilled version of Virginia back in the day, where they don't look to push unless they have numbers. They're very calculated with when they push. They don't like to crash the offensive glass. They don't really have the size anyway. They just get back. They take transition away. So I think the key is to be calculated with your pace, where if you have an advantage, you've got to take it, because you do not want to play against a set defense for a team that does have depth, that does have length and physicality. So you do have to take advantage of opportunities. But when you take a shot, just get back. The amount of points you're going to get on secondary, offensive rebound, second chance points, versus what you're going to give up in transition, it's not worth it. So that's how you control pace. You control rhythm more so than you control pace. Right. And I think that's the difference between Villanova and the old Virginia. Virginia was focused on tempo and pace. Villanova is really, they're more calculated than that. It's more about the rhythm of the game, where they control the rhythm of the game. They like to operate in the half court with this experienced group, the experienced group that knows how to switch and communicate defensively, but also playing inside out with guards. They're able to control that rhythm, whereas if it's slow like that, Kansas doesn't have the flow and the rhythm that they like.
And they're going to go against a team that wants to push it. It's interesting, and I brought this up earlier. Bill Self wants Harris is going to start again. Everybody's like, why not Remy Martin? Look, when you talk to Joe all the time, you know, Joe will tell you, like, the kids he puts on the floor are the kids he trusts. I sense Bill Self, long haul, trusts Harris, because Martin, to me, just my opinion, right, there's that line between aggressiveness and recklessness, and he flirts with it.
Yep. And it's one of those things where if he's coming off the bench, you can live with mistakes more so than if he was starting the game.
Agreed.
People don't understand the difference of that, where you can be a spark plug, and if it's not your night, it's not your night. It's really hard when you're a starter and expected to play starters' minutes, establish a rhythm to the game, establish a pace and a tempo to the game from a guy that you don't fully trust to be team first. And their biggest strength is not their individuals, even Oshai Agbaji, not their biggest strength. Mm-hmm. The biggest strength is their balance. And ultimately, Dwan Harris is going to give you better balance, even though he ain't going to look to score, and they may not even cover him.
Right. Well, now Duke, North Carolina, third time around. So far in playing, Duke has been the better team for 58 minutes and North Carolina for 22. Last 2 minutes of the first half, which kind of turned that game. Then the second half with just five guys. They didn't go to the bench once. They dominated the second half. I'll start with this. What has Jeremy Roach meant, the reinsertion of him into the starting lineup? What has that meant to stabilizing how Duke plays?
Well, you got a guy who's showing the willingness to create, take, and make individual plays, make shots. You know, and that really is it's balance on a different level for this team. Balance not through ball movement, balance through playmaking.
Yeah.
Where you can't key on one guy or the other. You know, A.J. Griffin, there was a time where he emerged and the team took a little step back. It was almost as if every player that emerged into their role, not emerged as an individual, but as every player emerged into their role, and I said this earlier in the season, and some people are like, what are you talking about? I'm like, you got to think about these things. You can't just think on the surface all the time. Think about this. A player steps up into a bigger role, even though it is their own role. It's an adjustment of that team. That personnel has to adjust to their own personnel. There's an adjustment from within. There's a comfort that you have to develop that is, all right, here's how I get mine based on A.J. Griffin being more of a star.
Right.
Here's how Jeremy Roach gets his based on A.J. Griffin doing what he does, Trevor Keels doing what he does, and Paolo Banchero getting the ball he likes it.
Yep.
So it's just been time for these guys to adjust to their own personnel. And again, people say, well, what does that mean, adjust to your own personnel? How do you not know your own personnel? You don't know your own personnel until you play games.
Right.
Until you've been tested and lose, until you fail. And these are kids that they haven't failed in their entire lives. You know, they're learning this for the first time. So I think Jeremy Roach got a chance to sit. He also played enough over last year and this year to know how to watch the game, which is incredible. I can't tell you the importance of that. If you know how to watch when you're sitting, you know how to impact when you get back. And I think you're seeing that. You're seeing the maturity of Jeremy Roach more so than anything else.
North Carolina crushed him with a high ball and high ball screen in the second half of that game. They over and over and over. This is part of Hubert Davis' system. It's a little bit different than Roy's. They had to adapt to it. Right?
Yeah.
So, A, the key to North Carolina running that, and then finally Duke, how they need to adjust to it, because obviously, you know, in obviously the swirl of that atmosphere, they just did nothing with it.
Yeah, well, it's two separate coverages. If Brady Manick the one setting the screen, you switch. It's really simple. You switch. You switch and force the toughest jumper possible.
Absolutely.
If it's Baycott, go under and you force long threes.
Yep.
North Carolina is not going to beat you with long threes. Now, Caleb Love can put on a show and have that kind of performance, and that's great. But North Carolina is not going to beat Duke that way. It's simple. You know, they're going to have to do a lot more than just have one guy have a great performance. So it's two different kinds of coverages. If it's Baycott, you just go under. You force that tough shot. You force that ball screen as high as possible.
Yep.
You hug up and you go under. And then if it's Brady Manick, you just switch. And you live with that. That forces Carolina into situational counters. And I'm interested to see what they do in a situational counter. No one's made them do it. And they're coming off of, you know, arguably an easy game.
Yes.
And now they're playing a Duke team who's a team of destiny, a team that's motivated by two things, right? One is, hey, man, I want to go out and beat North Carolina. I was there on the court with 70-some former Duke players looking at us like we're failures. Yep. I want to go beat North Carolina on this stage. And the other one, we can't lose this game. Right. You know, desperation's a good motivator, man. I never pick a fight with a guy who's desperate. Not a chance. So I think that desperation part of this destiny is going to be hard to overcome. So I think you're going to get a great effort from Duke. I do think Duke wins this one and probably takes on Kansas, at which point, who knows, man.
Yeah. John, great conversation, as always. I know we covered a lot of ground. I know there's more ground to cover, but thanks a lot. This was tremendous.
Yeah. Hey, man, my pleasure. Anytime.